Joining me in the studio today is Bob Teeter. He's an executive director over at Sisla Outreach Services. And coming up later in the month of September, they're going to be doing a grand opening of your new resource center. Why don't you tell a little bit about how that process came to be?
Yeah, so about 5 years ago, Board President Bart Mueller and I were going over some surveys and hearing back from clients how much of a challenge that they had navigating all the social services and resources in the area and having to go from place to place to place. And for a lot of them, trying to take off time off work here, then taking time off work again to go to this place was becoming a challenge. And I'm big on collaboration, and I've been involved with a few community center developments, and so we started kicking around this idea, and we worked with Sisla Vision and a few other groups to start exploring the possibilities of a one-stop shop social service center. And that started about 5 years ago, right about the same time the pandemic hit, so that kind of slowed things up a little bit. We originally were looking at developing something on land owned by the Lutheran Church, New Life Lutheran. But as we started hearing from more and more groups who also had a need for a facility, that space wasn't going to be big enough. And then we started working with the City of Florence, and that became a challenge in of itself. And then the Nazarene Church, who was next door to our old facility now, approached us and said that they're looking at folding and selling the building. And so through about a two-year negotiation, we were able to secure that facility. Actually, we got it on Christmas Eve, which was a nice Christmas present. Mm-hmm. And we've been working on the renovations ever since.
So the facility you had to the facility you now have, tell folks about the difference in size just from the one to the other.
Yeah, it's going to be a little bit of a game changer for us and a little bit of restructuring to adapt. So we're going from about 3,300 square feet to over 14,000 square feet. And that's partly due to other services that we're bringing in with us, of course, to create this kind of one-stop shop social service center. But it's going to be much more than that. It's really going to be kind of another community center in town because there's a lot of shared spaces, a lot of spaces that can be rented out by community groups. We've already got a waiting list for some of those spaces. We're partnering with about 10 to 12 other agencies that will provide services outside of this building, and all pulling our expertise together to help, as our tagline shows, build community and transform lives.
So my understanding of a church is there's usually a big area where folks meet. Is that going to be broken into small rooms, or is it already broken into small rooms?
No, we actually didn't have to. There was only two offices that we had to break up into smaller rooms. That was really already set up for a lot of our needs. So the original sanctuary is now a clothing distribution room. And that was in the west part of the building, which was the original structure. And then they did an expansion in the 90s, and they created this multipurpose room. It was originally set up for the youth groups to utilize. But as the church grew, that became the sanctuary. And so now that is still a multipurpose room. It's a large meeting hall. We kept the basketball hoops in there and the volleyball sleeves. There's a portable stage in there. It can seat up to 100. In there with the tables out, I can seat more than that if we just had chairs. The church actually left a lot of the furniture behind, which saved us considerable costs. So that's just one of the features is having a large group meeting area. And then there's also a dedicated support group room that several community groups will be utilizing. There's a classroom upstairs that can seat up to 25. That'll be utilized. We've got a grant from the Three Rivers Foundation to put all kinds of technology in that classroom that we're very excited about. The main feature is going to be an 85-inch smart board, much like they utilize in the school district. It's basically a giant iPad and that we can do classes from.
Talk about the collaboration with the Confederated Tribes and how that came to be.
Yeah, we're very excited about that. So, you know, as we were talking before going on air, there have been a lot of references to the land that we're on, that we live on, that it was originally belonging to the Sisla tribe. And there's a lot of recognition of that, but we wanted to put a little bit more meat to that. So we started working with Jesse Beers, who's the cultural education director, and just started having some conversations. How can we pay proper respects to the tribe and the land? And one of the things that we came up with was helping to bring back the language And so a lot of the signage within the building is going to be in the Saisla language in addition to English and Spanish, and in a lot of locations Braille. And then we also wanted to have an opportunity for tribe members to share their art and culture. And so there'll be art displayed throughout the building. There's some signage in the building talking about the land that the building sits on. There'll be a QR code that people can scan and go to a website and find out more about the culture and the language.
And while you were doing this, you mentioned that Mapleton came up in the discussion. Talk a little bit about what happens.
Yeah, it's really neat. So Jesse shared with me that, you know, his vision, and it's now a reality, working with the Mapleton School District, they actually are learning the Saisla language. It's counted as a foreign language credit, which is ironic. But the state of Oregon, you know, says that's not a, you know, local or language. So it's a foreign language credit. And so students are learning. And they started doing a similar thing that we're doing. They have signs in the building that's in the Saisla language. So they're reading it and speaking it.
And they've also had to create new words, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, if you think about it, they didn't have restrooms back then. They didn't have a support group meeting room, you know, and those kind of things, or a kitchen. And so his team has worked on, you know, creating those words.
Or basketball hoops or football fields and stuff like that. Yeah. So what are some of the additional services that will be coming on board over time?
So we have several. There's a total of 12 offices in the facility. More than half of those will be occupied by Saisla Outreach Services. So the name of the facility is the Saisla Area Resource Center, but it is owned and operated by SOS. We have some partners that are going to be renting space in there. WIC is going to be in there. Laurel Hill Center is coming over from Eugene, which they specialize in helping individuals with mental and physical disabilities and mental illness diagnoses, particularly those who have been chronically unhoused, helping them develop some living skills and get them connected to job resources. We also will have the Reveille Foundation, which is a veteran-focused organization. They're fairly new to Oregon. They're based out of Arizona. They're in Springfield, and they'll be expanding to Western Lane County through this facility. And they also work with vets with housing issues, employment issues. They'll be running a support group, doing a wide range of things. We have a lot of groups who are expressing interest that we're in negotiation with for utilizing. We have kind of a office that's a shared office, so a group may come in once or twice a month to meet with clients there. And so they'll be renting it, like, you know, on a daily basis. We still have one office suite, a two-office suite, and one large office that's still available for rent. And we're talking with some different groups about that. But we're trying to expand resources for Western Lane County.
Now, October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Talk a little bit about what plans there are for SOS during that month.
So we always kick off that month with a mayoral proclamation, so we're working on that with the city. We also do a silent march and rally in Old Town, and that's right now scheduled for October 5th. And then we do various media campaigns, social media, the movie theater, different things to gain awareness because domestic violence is still a problem. Unfortunately, Oregon ranks highest not only in homelessness per capita, but also domestic violence rates. And we have some of the most severe cases in all of Oregon here in Western Lane County. Over the years, we've dealt with a few homicides. It's just sad to say it's prevalent. And it doesn't just affect that survivor. It affects the entire community. Over $8 billion a year is spent on medical services responding to domestic violence nationwide each year. Nearly that amount in legal services. Women oftentimes have higher insurance rates because of domestic violence statistics. So it does affect everyone. It's not just something that should be kept behind closed doors in somebody else's business. It affects everyone. And a lot of students who are dealing with that within their homes oftentimes have poor academic performance, and so it affects them as well.
Because they're dealing with a lot of stress at home, being in amidst all this violence going on.
Yeah, and we have some students who just can't stand it, so they leave and they're couch surfing with friends or they're living on the streets because they don't want to deal with it. So again, it affects everyone.
Unfortunately, there's no pat answer for solving it. It's just education? I mean,
it's education. It's changing culture. It's getting people to stand up and say this is not right. It's teaching kids what healthy relationships are. We work with Sayula School District, and we'll be working with the Mapleton School District in healthy relationships education. We've done over the years. We've been able to help a lot of students. Because one of the special things about Sayula Outreach Services is I have a couple of advocates who are what's called privilege advocates, meaning that they're mandated non-reporters. So they can't report any crime unless that person gives permission. Now, that may sound weird when you think of child abuse issues and things like that, but statistically, a lot of people do not seek help because they fear that mandated reporting status. A lot of students who have dealt with date rape and different things don't want to go talk to a counselor because they have to report, and they're afraid it's going to get out. Their parents are going to know. Their peers are going to know. And so having that that status opens the door for a lot of people to seek services and get the help they need. I would say probably 80% of the time, you know, working with a survivor, once they get comfortable and understand their rights, they end up reporting. But we've had individuals, particularly in sexual assault, who have refused to report because they feel like nobody's going to believe them. The perpetrator may be somebody who's prominent in the community, and they feel like that person is going to be believed more than them. So a lot of times we can help them with counseling. We can get them medical services. There's ways that we can work around reporting laws to help them get those medical services. But, yeah, it's an important status. Having worked in the youth industry for nearly 20 years, it was a hard concept for me to adjust to when I first started working at SOS. But as I started talking with survivors and hearing, you know, why that's a life-saving resource for them, it started to make sense, and now I'm in full support of it.
Does domestic violence by statistics tend to be generational?
Yes. It's oftentimes a learned behavior. We hear that a lot when survivors come in. We talk about what's healthy, what's not healthy, and it's like a foreign concept to them. They've never seen it any other way. They didn't know it could be a different way. You know, it's not unlike somebody who's been in a rough relationship and gets divorced and remarried to somebody that's unlike, you know, anybody they've ever experienced before, because they didn't know it could be so different. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of good, healthy relationships out there. There's a lot of people who are great examples for that. And they don't see it because a lot of times those things are kept behind closed doors.
I'm guessing that you have a lot of resources for people that may have questions or may be seeking answers that don't necessarily right at this moment want to talk to somebody, but maybe they can pick up some information that they can read and get a hold of.
Yeah. So once we get our doors open up at the end of September for the Resource Center, there'll be a lot of information available. Currently, my staff, even though we're between, you know, kind of buildings right now, we have staff that are working out of the DHS office and food share until we get our doors open. So people can have access to those advocates at both those locations. We're also available. We're still available on call 24/7. So we always have staff that are available 24/7 through our crisis line. So you can call 541-997-4444. So that represents the four major crimes that we deal with. And they can talk to an advocate or a trained volunteer at any one of those times. We can meet with a survivor of domestic or sexual violence 24/7. We have safe places that we can do that at. If there's immediate threat and police are called, you can tell an officer that you request an SOS advocate, and they will dispatch one of us out.
Okay. What happens with the old building?
It's for sale.
Oh, it's for sale.
Yeah, it's for sale. Yeah, we had a couple bites. We had one that the deal just fell through at the last minute because they had some financing issues that fell through. That's one of the things that we're going to use to help pay for this building. So the total project of the Resource Center is just under $1.8 million. And for a building that size, that sounds like a lot, but it's a heck of a deal. When we looked at building something from scratch that size, we were upwards of $12 million to do something like that for what we can do in there. So we saved a lot of money just renovating this place. We've already raised about half the money So the we're going to be opening our doors with half the project paid for. And then once we get the building sold, that'll take it down considerably. And then, and of course, we haven't really applied for too many grants yet. So that's kind of the next phase. So we'll hit a capital campaign really heavy this next year. We had a soft kickoff in August, and that generated quite a bit of money. When we open our doors, we'll have a table that people can find out about how they can contribute and how they can be recognized. We did have a donor step forward and said that between now and December 31st, they will match up to $50,000. So if we can raise $50,000, that's going to be turned into $100,000. Mm-hmm. So that'll take care of a big chunk of it.
Bob Teeter, thank you so much. Thanks for all you do in the community. Your help is very present. Thank you.
Thank you.